Is anybody here this morning, you're a big fan of nature shows? Anybody? Just me? I'm the only one raising my hand right now. That's okay. I'm a huge fan of them. But you know, even if you're not a big fan, you know how they work, right? They take you to some really far away location to see up close and personal things that happen in nature that you would never see in your backyard. You're never going to see them, you know, at a zoo type experience. And they're all pretty much the same. You've got this beautiful field and you see a sweet antelope grazing in the field. The music's peaceful. Birds are singing. There they are. He's grazing along. You've got a really amazing narrator. Have you ever noticed that? It's always, the way I describe it is it's like your Australian grandfather. That's sort of what it sounds like. Real deep, bassy voice that's not from America. And you're just drawn in as he talks about the sweet antelope grazing in the field. That was not a good Australian accent. Okay, I know. But they're talking, antelope's grazing, music's peaceful, all is well in the world. But little does this sweet antelope know that just a few short yards away in the tall grass, a leopard has been approaching. That leopard's been creeping up, and all of a sudden it bounds out of the grass and the music changes, doesn't it? The music changes. Now all of a sudden the antelope is in a race for its life. It's running through the field, bounding, bounding, bounding. Thankfully it catches up with the rest of the group, the herd. You think it's gonna be safe, but oh no, it makes the deadly mistake of veering back away from the pack, and now the leopard has a one-on-one with this one sweet little antelope. And right about the time that the leopard jumps up onto the back of the antelope, the scene switches to a bug on a tree in a random forest somewhere, and it just starts a whole nother scene, you know, a whole nother story. So that's the way these nature shows work. But here's the thing. The antelope, all is well. It's living life, and then when the leopard jumps out, mayhem has arrived. And the music changes, and everything changes in that moment. And ironically, this is a lot like life, isn't it? We're going along through life and things are good. Things are good at work. Things are good with our job. Things are good at home. Things are good with family, friends, dating relationships. Our kids are obeying for once in their lives. It's like we feel really good. And like if we had music playing around our life, it would be peaceful music. Birds would be singing. The narrator would be narrating our lives about just how great it is. You know, we swing by church on a Sunday and go get ice cream on a Tuesday. And it just seems like life is going as it should. And then out of nowhere, mayhem hits us. Mayhem shows up. And it comes in a lot of different forms, in a lot of different ways, but storms all of a sudden pop in and disrupt this peace and this life that we once were living. And this month in particular is known specifically for this. If you think about May, it's preceded by April. April's a great month. You got spring break. Love that. Get to go to the beach. Or if you stay around here, you've got no traffic for that week, which is a huge plus. And then you got Easter, everybody dresses up, everybody's in a good mood, family gets together, has a meal together. It's the first month that we really have warm, good weather. Everything's awesome in April. And then May shows up. And when May shows up, you get 72 invitations to graduate parties, most of whom you don't even know who these people are. Like one of them you're reading, you're like, wait a second, Tommy is graduating from the second grade. They sent us an invitation to a second grade graduation party. But then, of course, you've got to send a gift and show up. I mean, you're not going to, you know, leave them hanging. You got all these grad parties. You've got four end of school class parties that you've got to help out with or send something in with the kids. You got two field trips. You got a kids' baseball tournament in Wisconsin, by the way. You got stuff going on at your job. All of a sudden, this thing's due before, you know, the end of the month or before summer hits, before the end of the fiscal year. All of a sudden, May has gotten crazy. May has brought the mayhem. In fact, May has a nickname. You may have heard this before. You may have seen it on social media. A lot of people are talking about it this year. Maycember. Have you heard it called Maycember? It's like, it's got all the craziness of December just without Santa Claus and all the fun and the gifts. It's like you take out the sugar and the hot cocoa and you've got May. May is home to mayhem. And even if you're an empty nester here and you're like, no, May's not crazy for me, the truth is with your life, it's the same principle holds true, is that seems like the craziness in life is always just around the corner. And it may come in a lot of different forms, but mayhem will show up at your doorstep for all of us in different ways. And so this 3 weeks, this series, we're gonna be talking about surviving mayhem. What to do when life throws at you what you don't expect, what you don't desire, what you don't ask for, what you don't plan for. And our hope at the end of the day is not just that we would survive mayhem, but if there's a way to actually thrive through it, and I believe there is, if there's a way to thrive through it, that's what we want to grab a hold of. That's what we want to take a hold of and live out in the moments of mayhem in our lives. Now, as we get started today, there's an important trait about mayhem that we need to look at, and it's this right here, that it typically doesn't send to save the date. I mean, think about that. Occasionally in life, we have a heads up when something crazy might be coming our way, but most of the time, it shows up out of nowhere. Mayhem doesn't send a calendar request. You know, it doesn't send a meeting request. If it did, well, then we'd be able to plan for it. We would treat it as we do any other major project in life, a project at work, something going on the home front, something going on with our kids. We just treat it like that. We'd put it on the calendar. We'd make a plan and we'd crush it. You know, we'd save our money. We'd know, hey, 12 months from now, if we had a heads up, we're gonna have this kind of this financial mayhem and we need to save our money now. We just save for the 12 months leading up to it. Or, you know, if there's other things in life that in other areas of life that we knew it was coming, we had a heads up, we had a save the date, well, we could just plan accordingly. But unfortunately, that's not the way mayhem works. It doesn't send us to save the date. It's not courteous. We don't get a heads up on the front end. And typically, isn't this true? Typically, it shows up at the worst possible time, doesn't it? I mean, our plate is already full. We already have enough to worry about in life. We have things we're thinking about, things we're working hard on. And then on top of all of that, mayhem shows up. It's not always big. You know, as we talk the next couple of weeks, I don't want you to only think of the major storms of life, the major things that hit us in life. Mayhem can show up in really small ways too. It can be simply just a rift between you and your kids or you and your spouse, you and your coworker or your friend. Mayhem can disguise itself well, but we've got to be careful because even small doses of mayhem, over time, they can accumulate. And then we end up getting a year or two down the road and we're way off from where we want to be, way off from where we plan to be. Why? Because a little bit of mayhem snuck its way into our lives. And that's why this series is so important. Surviving mayhem. We are all guaranteed to have mayhem in our lives. So today, this is our save the date. That we have been officially warned. Mayhem is on its way in some way, shape, or form. And now we're gonna talk about what to do with it when it shows up at your doorstep. Today, I wanna talk about an old story. I want us to look at an old story. It's actually one of the oldest stories. And when I begin the story, you're gonna immediately know most of the story. This story has mayhem right at the center of it. In fact, in a lot of ways, it encompasses the definition of mayhem. But through this ancient account is a takeaway that we're going to take away for week one of our series. It comes from Genesis, the first book of the Old Testament, Genesis chapter 6, and it says this. This is the account of Noah. And again, you probably could fill the rest in, right? Because you Noah the rest of the story. You see what I'm saying? You don't like that? Gosh. It played really well at the 9. So, yeah, you know the rest of the story, don't you? I mean, you grew up in church. You did vacation Bible school. You did the flannel graph. Maybe you built an ark out of popsicle sticks. And then you sat back and looked at that ark and you were like, there's no way this thing's gonna float. And how in the world am I gonna fit all these animals in there? Maybe you didn't grow up in church, but you know about this story because you just love good Russell Crowe movies, you know? and the masterpiece he did 10 years ago on Noah. Yeah, we all know the story, right? So I just want to encourage you over the next couple of minutes, let's sit in it for a second. Let's not rush to the end of the story. Let's not jump to the end of the story. Let's not check out thinking, hey, I've heard this before. Because again, there's something really important for us to take away from this today. This is the account of Noah and his family. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked faithfully with God. This was thousands and thousands of years ago, and Noah walked faithfully with God, and God began to warn Noah that he was going to flood the earth. We don't know exactly how that happened. We don't know if that's like verbally he was talking or somehow this was just coming into Noah's mind and he knew it for sure, but somehow he gets warned of this flood, and God begins to give him instruction on what he's supposed to do. God says this, "So make yourself an ark of cypress wood. Make rooms in it and coat it with pitch inside and out." And God continues to unpack the specifics on how to do this. He says, "This is how you are to build it. The ark is to be 300 cubits long, 50 cubits wide, and 30 cubits high." He goes on, he says, "Make a roof in it. And here's how you're supposed to make the roof. Put a door on the side of it. Here's how you're supposed to make the door. You should have various decks throughout this ark. I'm gonna bring floodwaters, Noah. I'm gonna bring floodwaters." Then he tells Noah this, that he says, "But I will establish my covenant with you, Noah, and you will enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife, your sons' wives with you." This word covenant is really important. It's actually important throughout scripture. There's a number of different covenants that are mentioned. And sometimes when reading this story, in fact, you may have already gone there in your mind, it's hard to think about God doing something like this on purpose, flooding the earth on purpose. And we can kind of feel to ourselves, gosh, that just doesn't line up with his character. And the reason why we think that is because we are looking through a new covenant lens. Jesus came and introduced a new covenant, a new relationship between man and God. So if you feel a little bit of that, don't let that hang you up. We're just simply looking through a new covenant lens. So God gives Noah these instructions. He gives him the warnings. He tells him, "Hey, I'm gonna establish a covenant with you. This is what you're supposed to do." And a few verses later, it says this in verse 22, that Noah did everything just as God commanded him. And there is so much that is compressed down into this verse right here. Like when you read this and you kind of understand the full scope of it, it's like, really, that's all we get is one verse? Because Noah doing everything that God had commanded him to do, again, by most accounts, it would have taken him somewhere around 75 years to build the ark. The size that it was, materials that he used. So this one line encompasses not just weeks, not just months, or years. This encompasses decades, probably 75 to 100 years. He was obeying, he had long obedience in the same direction. 75 years of this. And this concludes chapter 6. And at the beginning of chapter 7, we have fast forwarded to the point where the ark is complete, it's ready to go. And God tells Noah, "Hey, I want you to go into the ark 7 days from now. 7 days from now, I'm gonna send a flood on the earth and you need to get prepared. Take your family onto the ark and I want you to bring two of every animal onto the ark as well." And in verse 7, it says this, that Noah did all that the Lord commanded him. Again, so much compressed into one line here. Can you imagine how much work that would have been to get all the animals onto the ark? I mean, we only have 4 animals at our house. They're little, they're not pets, they're sons. and they're a lot of work. They're a lot of work. I can't imagine 2 of every animal. But Noah and his family load up. They load up and then they close up and they brace for impact. And then it starts to drizzle, and then it starts to rain. And slowly and sure enough, Noah sees a storm come of epic proportions. The rains came down, the floods went up. Rains went down and the floods went up. Some of y'all remember that from when you were growing up in church. The rains came down, the floods went up, and it rained for days and days and days, flooded the earth. But Noah and his family were saved. And after a while, the waters recede and they end up landing on dry land again, and they get off of the ark and they begin life again on dry land. Now, you may be thinking to yourself today as we talk through this, is this true? Like, are these true historical events, or is this just allegory? Is it just metaphor? And this is a debate that many, many people have had. You can spend hours unpacking this. If you listen to the way Jesus talked about it, he talked about it in the New Testament as if it was a historical event. But here's the thing I don't want you to miss today. See, you don't need to fully buy in to this being a historical event to take away the principle from today. You don't have to think, okay, this was down to the T, detailed historical fact to get the point for today. Here's the point for today, that when the storm hit, Noah was glad he had built a boat. When the storm hit, Noah was glad he had built a boat. And for you, for me, for us today, when the storms hit you, when your life begins to flood, you're gonna be glad you built a boat. Preparation. Preparation is key to surviving mayhem. If you're gonna survive, much less thrive through this, you gotta do some things on the front end. In fact, it's often what you do before mayhem that makes the most difference. If you wait, and it's gonna be too late to do a lot of those things. I mean, you think about it, it's hard to build a boat once it starts raining. Preparation is key to surviving mayhem. So here's a question for you today. I want you to think about your life. Are you prepared for what life may throw at you? Are you preparing? Are you living your life in such a way, making decisions, using your words, your relationships, your life? Are you living in such a way that is preparing you for whatever life may throw at you down the road? How do we do this? How do we prepare? Well, think about Noah for just a second. 75 years of boring boat building. It's what he did over and over again. He woke up in the morning and he worked on that boat. And he woke up in the morning and he worked on that boat. I don't know if you've ever been involved in a project like this, maybe something at your house and like it went on. It was supposed to last 2 weeks, but it ended up lasting like 4 to 6 weeks. And you thought, I am done with this. Imagine being Noah and having to do it for 75 years. It's boring, monotonous work, but oh, how he was grateful the moment the floods came. And it's similar for us. Our preparation is not always exciting. In fact, rarely is it so. That's the reason why we don't do it automatically. We don't naturally just prepare for these things. It's not super fun. It's not what we want to do on Friday night. Our preparation can be boring. So what is boring boat building look like for us? I've come up with just a couple things of how to prepare. The first is this right here, something you need to build. Build your connection to God. Build your connection to God now, before mayhem strikes. Our default oftentimes is to wait until things begin to unravel before we reach out to God or lean into God or begin to pray. We're gonna talk more about this in week 3 of this series, but we need to do so beforehand. We need to build our connection with God now so that it's there, it's in place, it's our foundation before the storms of life hit. The reason why Noah built an ark is that he heard from God. You think about it, we often, you'll hear people say, you may have thought this before, I know I've thought it before, it's like, man, I could never do that. 75 years, building a boat, like I don't think I would do that. You may think the same thing, oh, yeah, I don't know if I could do that, but here's what I know. In those moments, we are discounting God's presence because you would build a boat and you could build a boat and I would build a boat and I could build a boat if I was confident God had told me to do so. We take that part out of the story that, no, God spoke to Noah and told him to do this. There's no telling what we're capable of if we're hearing from God. We've got to build a devotional life with God, build our connection with him. Look at the way Genesis describes Noah. He walked faithfully with God. The idea of walking is just a regular connection. He's not sprinting, he's not running. No, there's a casualness to it. There's just a connected to us. He lived connected to God. And it was through this that he was able to hear those instructions and to heed the warning of the storm that was to come. So you gotta build your connection with God. We need to walk faithfully with him now, before the storms in life come. It's not too different from what Jesus said at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. He said, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice, meaning actually follows through, lives their life connected to me, follows me, walks with me. Everyone who does this is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rains came, the winds blew, the storm came in, and the house stood firm because its foundation was on the rock. But whoever hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice, AKA does not walk with me, does not follow me, does not build their connection with me, well, they're like a person that built their house on the sand. And the storm came and the rains fell and the winds blew and the house fell with a great crash. Jesus is saying, you follow me, you stay connected to me, you walk with me and the foundation will be built in your life to be able to withstand any storm that life can throw at you. Build your connection with God. Do it now. Do it now before mayhem strikes. Number two, build your connection to community. Build good relationships with good people in your lives. What relationships do you have in your life right now? What relationships could you build in your life right now that would be a safety net when mayhem strikes? We often think, I don't really need them. I don't need more friends, or I've got so much going on. I'm too busy. I've got other things I'm doing. But when the storms of life hit, we'll be glad that we built a community and a network around us. You got to build your connection to community. One of the things I hear as a pastor often, typically when families are going through some sort of grief or mourning process around a funeral, or maybe I visit a family in the hospital, so much of the time they will say something along these lines. They will say, I don't know how people get through this without faith. I don't know how people get through this without faith. And they're talking about belief in God, yes, but they're also talking about the community that is built around you when you follow Jesus and engage in the life of a local church. They have people surrounding them, praying for them, encouraging them, building them up. That's why we've got to build our connection to community. It's what we're about as a church. It's the reason why we're constantly encouraging you to take a couple steps. If you're not in a community group, we want you to get in a community group because it's going to help you build life-changing relationships. We encourage you to serve. And it's not just because we need volunteers, although we do need volunteers. We got hundreds of students, hundreds of children doing some incredible things in the next generation. So it's not just that we need volunteers. It's actually because it will grow your faith when you step up and serve. Because as you serve, you're shoulder to shoulder, you begin to get to know these people. It literally builds a family around you. It builds a strong community around you that can not only encourage you and cheer you on in the good times, but can come alongside you when mayhem strikes. If you talk to any of our teams on a Sunday morning in any of our environments, if you got to know them, you would see, wow, they really are like a family. It's the reason why we say over and over again, find ways to make this big church feel like your church. Find ways to make it personal. Find ways to make it feel like home. And we've done everything we can to remove obstacles to that. We want this place to feel like home to you, because that will prepare you for when mayhem strikes. So you got to build good relationships with good people. Build your connection to community. And then number three, watch the telltales. Watch the telltales. You may have heard the phrase before, it's a telltale sign. You've heard that before. And you may be thinking, I've got no idea where that came from. I had no idea where it came from either until I went sailing one time. And the captain of the boat that we were on was describing some of the different things going on. And I said, hey, what are these little things on the back of the sails? And he tells me, hey, that's a telltale. And a telltale is simply a small piece of yarn that hangs on the back of a sail. And it's an indicator for the captain of the ship to know that his sail is positioned correctly in order to catch the wind, in order for the boat to move in the direction it needs to move. If it's positioned correctly, then that little piece of yarn lays flat against the inside of the sail. If it's not positioned correctly, that little piece of yarn will begin to flap in the wind. It will dangle down and flap, and they'll know in that moment, oh wow, my sails are not positioned correctly. And therefore, the boat's not gonna go where I want it to. It's a tiny little piece of yarn. It makes a really big difference. And for us to prepare, we've gotta pay attention. We gotta pay attention to the small but important indicators in our lives. There's telltales all around us, relationally. As you look at the important relationships in your life, you can tell sometimes when things begin to get off between you and someone else, a coworker, a spouse, a kid, there's a misunderstanding, or gosh, I don't like the way I said that, or the way they said that, huh? Like, pay attention to the telltales. There's telltales financially. I mean, you set a budget and you say, hey, here's our plan, here's where we're headed, and things begin to happen. You go, wow, we're getting outside the boundaries here, outside the guardrails financially. There's some of these physically. You think about your energy, your mood, how you're relating to other people. Obviously, doctor's visits and all the tests that they can run, those are all telltales. Emotionally, there are telltales. Let me ask you a question. How do you do emotionally when you're stuck in traffic? Here's the thing, y'all. Traffic is not mayhem. It may feel like mayhem. It's not mayhem. It's just a reality. I mean, traffic is just Monday. Traffic is just Thursday. Traffic is 8:30 in the morning and you're on the road, or 4:30 in the afternoon. I mean, traffic is a reality. So if you are losing it in traffic, what are you gonna do when real mayhem comes? If you're losing it with something that you are guaranteed to have this week, just about every one of us, guaranteed to be stuck in traffic, to have somebody driving around us, and we think to ourselves, that person has no idea what they're doing. I can't believe they're driving that way. You know, if emotionally we lose it with something that we can be guaranteed will come, well, how are we gonna handle or be prepared for the things that we don't know are coming? For the surprise mayhem in life. That's what a telltale does. It gives us an indication that there's work to be done. We need to pay attention to it. Often these are signs of a larger storm that is approaching. It's a heads up before it hits. Sometimes it's just life. Sometimes it's nothing major. But we can adjust. We can prepare. We can change course only if we are paying attention. There's a famous proverb that says, the prudent see danger and take refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. The prudent, the wise, they see danger, meaning they're watching. You gotta be watching in order to see it. They see danger and they take refuge. They redirect their course. They do something different in order to avoid the storm. But the simple, the unwise, the simple keep going and suffer for it. They keep going, meaning they're oblivious to what's going on around them. They're not watching. They keep going. They don't change direction. And as a result, they suffer harm. This is what we've got to do to prepare. We got to pay attention to our lives. We got to watch the telltales around us. So, three things to prepare. Build your connection to God. Your devotional life with God. You know specifically for you how you could take a step to build your connection with God. Number two, build your connection to community. And number three, be a student of your life. Observe and watch the telltales. Doing this will help you prepare for the mayhem that's coming down the road. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, well, Adam, that's great about preparing and all, but what if I'm in the middle of mayhem right now? What if it's too late to prepare? And I'm so glad you asked that, because that's what we're going to talk about the next 2 weeks in this series, Surviving Mayhem. Let's pray together. Father, thank you so much for the invitation to follow you, the invitation to surrender our lives to you, to live in your direction, and the promises that you make as a result. Thank you that you didn't promise us that life would be smooth, but you promised to be with us and to strengthen us and for your grace to be sufficient for us. So I pray for each of us today, whether we're in mayhem, whether we're just preparing for what may come, God, would you help us see clearly the steps that we need to take in order to build our connection with you and to build our connection to others around us so we're stronger and more resilient with whatever life throws at us. We pray it all in Jesus' name. Amen.